Joseph M. Ashley, a doctor of rehabilitation and nationally recognized industry leader who is blind, brings a personal commitment and over 30 years of leadership in developing services and creating opportunities for individuals with disabilities to support their choice to live, work, and thrive in their communities.
Welcome to the Blind Experience Podcast with Dr. Joe Ashley. Today, we're going to have the opportunity to speak with the new commissioner of the Department for the Blind and Vision Impaired, Dr. Rick Mitchell. Rick, welcome to the podcast today.
I'm glad to be with you, Joe. I look forward to spending a few moments with you.
I'm pretty excited about this. We're going to take some time today to talk to Rick about his vision for DBVI services and take a look at the future. But first, Rick, congratulations again on your new appointment. Can you give us some background on your journey that resulted in you being appointed the commissioner for the Department for the Blind and Vision Impaired?
Well, Joe, if you don't mind, let me go way back.
Okay.
Let me first just share with you that at age 14, I lost my vision. Mm-hmm. I have a identical twin brother. He lost his vision a few years before I did, but we were born premature. And so our retinas didn't fully develop like they should have. So at age 14, I went from having 20/25 vision to not having any vision at all.
Wow.
Which, you know, since my brother had lost his sight a few years before I did, I certainly saw how he did a lot of things.
Okay.
So that kind of helped a little bit.
So you were sort of cushioned.
Yes. But, you know, after I lost my vision, my parents, the one thing I certainly have to take off my hat to them is that their expectations for my brother and I were expected to do everything just like my siblings were.
Mm-hmm.
We were the youngest two of five children, and we had a small farm. So, you know, my dad still expected for me to go out when it was time to pick up hay. You know, I just like I did before I lost my vision, I still drove the tractor around the hayfield. You know, with people just give me a little bit of verbal instruction. I always appreciated riding the tractor over having to get out in the field and actually pick up the bales of hay.
Yeah, I understand that from doing a little hay baling myself as a young man.
Yes. And, you know, I was telling some young people recently that even the expectation was we heated some with firewood and, you know, I had to go out and chop wood just like anybody else. Had to learn how to do it a little bit differently because I broke too many wooden handles. So my dad went out and bought a fiberglass handle for the axe, and so I wouldn't break the axe any longer when I missed the piece of wood. When I was in high school, I had a couple teachers, especially a gym coach that I can think about, that encouraged me to become part of the track team.
Really?
And so in high school, I threw the shot put and the disc. I had to learn how to, especially the disc, how to throw it a little bit differently, because if you know anything about throwing disc, you will get in a circle and do about a 1.5 spin in that circle, and then you let the disc go. And, you know, I was afraid doing 1.5 spin, I might lose my orientation to the circle. So I had to modify how I threw the disc with about a 3/4 spin. But, you know, I just had to keep practicing and keep practicing. And the overall message that I think about back on my youth is that the expectations my parents had, teachers in school, all of those folks had the same expectation for me, just like they would any other student or in my family, like any of the other siblings I have. And so I think that makes a huge difference.
So the expectations from all the people around you, the significant people around you, helped drive you forward to try things and keep moving.
Yes, yes. I think about some things now that I tried that I have enough sense now not to try again. One time I tried downhill skiing. And
I've done that.
You know, did it for a while. Stayed up. And everything was going well until I was headed to an embankment that was a little bit too steep to go over. But I think you have to be willing to try those things.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of that just builds confidence. And so went on to college. I went to Liberty University. And as I was there, also did some work. I tapped into some various programs that would pay me for an hourly rate. I remember my very first job was in Appomattox, Virginia, at the National Park where Lee Surrender to Grant took place. I actually was the tour guide in that house, and which was exciting and created a little interest on my part in especially Virginia history. So all through while I was in college, I was always working, whether it was a tour guide or I worked in some programs, human service type of programs. And even at the university, I would grade audio recordings for the communication majors. And that just made a difference when, after I finished my master's degree in counseling, having that work experience, when I went out to get my first real job, I had all of this other experience. And that's certainly one of the things is today as I talk to young people, I'm always encouraging them to work. It's great to get an education, but you also need that work experience. It's just as valuable as the degree that you may be pursuing.
So you found the work experience continued that expectation piece of keeping you motivated and keeping you moving forward and giving you the background that you needed to know how to work in a real world setting.
Yes, absolutely. In 1985, I applied for a position with the Department for the Blind and Vision Impaired in our Roanoke office as a vocational rehabilitation counselor. And, of course, my master's was in counseling. It was not specifically in rehabilitation counseling. So I remember I went in for the interview, and I always encourage people to be candid and transparent. And I'll never forget one of the questions in the interview was what I would include on an IWRP. And I, like I said, I did not have any training in rehabilitation counseling. So, you know, I looked at one of the interviewer was asking me the question, and I said, well, if you will tell me what those initials stand for, I will tell you what I'll put on it.
And dear listener, that is an individualized written rehabilitation plan, which was pretty specific to the job.
Yes. I left that interview. I wasn't sure if I would get the position or not, but the next day the manager called me and offered me the position, and I started with the agency November 1st, 1985, as a VR counselor. And basically my territory was like around the Lynchburg area, down towards Danville, back towards Roanoke. And I worked in the Roanoke office for right at 10 years. The last three of those 10 years, rehabilitation or assistive technology came on the scene pretty heavily. And I got involved in providing rehab technology throughout the entire region, in addition to carrying a full caseload. And another thing I always encourage people to do is, you know, if you're working, always be quick to volunteer for other opportunities.
Other assignments,
other than just what your job is. And so, you know, I quickly developed the reputation of not only leading the state in the number of successful cases being closed, meaning people that had gone to work. I also did some pretty good work when it came to the assistive technology.
Okay.
So when a position came open for a regional manager position in our Bristol office, I was offered that position. And I was in Bristol for 17 years as a regional manager. And again, there, any assignments that came up in addition to the being the regional manager, I always took advantage of. And so now almost nine and a half years ago, when the deputy commissioner position came open for services here in Richmond, I applied for it and was offered the position. And so that's where I've been for the last 9.5 years. And then this past May, Governor Youngkin asked me to serve as DBVI's commissioner. So that's been my journey from losing my vision at age 14 to where I am today.
Wow, Rick, that's quite a history. I think it's important for people to realize that the importance that you found in expectations, in work, and continuing to volunteer and be central to a job. What do you think would be the most important couple of things you've learned that help make you a successful professional who's a blind individual?
Certainly, a lot of good soft skills. Learn how to talk with people, how to interact with people, how to be independent as possible. The assistive technology to me is also critical.
Okay.
Because I can do everything on my computer just like anyone else
can. Yes, you can.
You know, using like the Microsoft Office 365 product or any of case management systems, being able to use all of that independently is crucial.
So just keeping up with the things that a normal person would use in the office, but making sure you're on top of it so that you can be successful, as well as those things about interpersonal relationships, being able to talk with people.
Yes, yes. Okay. And it's never enough to just get by, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think you have to really push yourself as hard as you can to be the very best that you can. And just don't accept mediocrity.
Got to keep focused. Rick, can you share your vision for DBVI over the next 4 years? What are you most excited about?
We have several different divisions. We have our services division, which it involves vocational rehabilitation, rehab teaching, independent living, orientation and mobility. That's where you'll find our rehabilitation center, as well as the library and resource center, our educational services, low vision. That area, the best way I've always described the services division, if DBVI has a service that can touch somebody's life, you'll find it in our service division.
Okay.
And what I want to do there is certainly in our vocational rehab department with the pre-employment transition services, which is targeted services to students and youth. And we have been doing some really strong programming there, but what we're finding is that the more programs that we're offering, like in whether it's in information technology, whether it's in robotics, we are finding that we are able to help students develop career pathways that they're able to get the necessary credentials and certifications so that they can go to work and they can start down a career pathway.
Mm-hmm.
We are partnering with other like universities throughout the Commonwealth. For example, back in the spring, we did a program called Blind Design. It was with the architectural program at Virginia Tech, where we just introduced what it would be like to work in that field without any vision. We had a gentleman that's a blind architect that came in and even spoke to the students. We also, this summer, we did a program at James Madison University where it was just introducing students that are thinking about going to college, what college life would be like. It was a week-long program. And so we are doing a lot of programming with students because what we have learned is that if we equip those students with the necessary skills of blindness, as well as any other skills they may need, like with technology, then those students are able to enter into various training programs. And it doesn't always have to be a four-year college degree. It can be a lot of technical training as well. They're able to enter into those programs. They've got the necessary skills, and then they learn the technical knowledge that they need. And at the same time, we're doing what we call work-based learning experiences. A lot of people just call that, you know, like on-the-job training or like a summer job, for example.
Paid internships.
Paid internships is another way to do it. We're finding that those students are getting those opportunities while they're in school. Then when they're done with their formal training, then they're ready to start a career. And oftentimes when we've done a paid internship or an on-the-job training, the business is so impressed with how the individual has functioned on the job. Lots of times they're offering jobs to those students. And so then they start down their career pathway.
Okay. So what you're doing is setting up these students down that career pathway, but giving them the foundational skills that can help get them and allow them to choose whether they want 4 years or a two-year degree or a certificate program.
Exactly.
Well, that sounds pretty good.
And then I mentioned our services division. The other division we have is our enterprise division.
Uh-huh.
which is the part of the Virginia Industries for the Blind, which consists of two plants. One is in Charlottesville and one's here in Richmond, and they do various jobs, like in the Charlottesville plant, they, in particular, they make mattresses and other like safety vests and things like that. And then here in the Richmond plant, they do more of a lot of packaging of products. Mm-hmm. And those are good paying jobs. They offer benefits. Wage is certainly above minimum wage. But then in addition to that, we also have contract management services and a number of those positions, and they pay really well.
Mm-hmm.
And some retail store positions that are located on military bases. And so within the enterprise division, one thing that I have said we need to do there, and we have a goal, is to increase the number of employment opportunities. So we're looking for new opportunities so that other people that are blind or vision impaired can go to work. And so DBVI offers services where a lot of what we would consider learning skills of blindness training takes place. But then we also have this whole other division that actually creates employment opportunities.
So you've got a lot of different opportunities for people.
Yes. Yes.
Excellent.
Because what I know is this, the greatest way for somebody to be independent is to earn a paycheck.
Yes.
Because it's when you have that paycheck and you
have the bottom line, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, it really is. Then, you know, you determine what your life looks like.
Mm-hmm. So to take control of your life, a good job is one of those important things, and you're doing your best to figure out how that can happen for these folks.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
Excellent. So, Rick, can you tell us something about the services you provide out here at the Center for the Blind here in Richmond?
Sure, Joe. At the Virginia Rehabilitation Center for the Blind and Vision Impaired, we provide a number of different programs. Basically, from September through June, we run what we call our adult training program. And that's where students can come and live in a residential dorm that we have, or we also have some commuter students. And then Monday through Friday, we will provide blindness skills training. And that's things like learning how to use the long white cane, how to prepare meals. That's our personal home management, how to dress for success. Then we also do all the informational technology training and the assistive technology training. If you need to learn how to read Braille, they'll do that as well. So it's a very intensive program. People can come and, you know, for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, you're getting that training. And I call that our fast track to training. We certainly offer all of that training in our regional offices. But when people can only come and see you once every couple weeks for an hour or two at a time, it takes you much longer to learn those skills. So when people can come here to the center and learn that and, you know, in a very intensive program, then they're able to go back home and live their lives independently.
So it's a quick way to get those skills that they need to be successful.
Yes, absolutely. And then during the summer, we have a 5-week program for students, high school students, where they're doing the same thing. They're learning those skills of blindness, but then that we also create a work opportunity for 3 weeks, 4 hours a day, in addition to their skills of blindness training. And then we do a lot of confidence building as well. Things like they can do white water rafting and rock climbing, and we will go down to Williamsburg, and they will walk the streets of Colonial Williamsburg independently. And so they're learning various skills, and then we have them to go out into the community and put it into action. And when they do that, students are building confidence. And then we also do a 1-week program for senior adults where they can come in and they can also learn the skills of blindness and learn how to travel independently using a long white cane. So the programming at the center is, we're certainly nationally recognized for a very intensive program, but beyond that, one that is known for its excellence. And people that come through our program at VRCBVI are able to go and live an independent life like many individuals that are blind and vision impaired would desire to do.
Sounds like it's putting a lot of emphasis on just those practical living skills that will enhance somebody's experience.
Yes, and the center also offers some virtual trainings mm-hmm. as well. And during the pandemic, we certainly learned how to do that well,
yeah.
and they're continuing to do that post-pandemic.
I will say I had the opportunity to participate in some of those virtual classes during the pandemic, and I thought it was really well done and good information and good topics,
yes.
very practical information.
Yeah, it's something as simple as learning how to use the iPhone voiceover feature, which is
yes.
An audible voice on the iPhone so that someone that's blind or vision impaired can use it independently.
And also some stuff about Braille that was pretty practical.
Yes.
That I thought was unique, or board games, or leisure activities.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Even travel kinds of things.
Exactly.
Was very useful, I thought, for people to understand and appreciate. Now, Rick, you've been appointed to the Virginia Workforce Development Council, and this is a first for the vocational rehabilitation programs. What do you think is the significance of this appointment, and how do you see it benefiting blind individuals and low vision individuals, as well as people with other types of disabilities?
I'm really excited about being appointed to this board because this is for the very first time we actually have representation on the Workforce Board for Virginia. The Workforce Board is helping shape a lot about Virginia's workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're at the table. And so when we're talking about maybe new programming, we can ensure that it's going to be accessible, that as we look at those programs that people with disabilities, not just people that are blind or vision impaired, but all disabilities, as we look at those programs, we want to make sure that they're accessible and any needs that may need to be taken care of, they're taken care of up front.
One of the things that it sounds like is if an economic opportunity comes into the Commonwealth, you're in a position to say, and here's how we can help people with disabilities access those particular jobs or whatever's coming in.
Yes, absolutely. And we have a team, not only at the Department for the Blind and Vision Impaired, but also at the Department of Aging and Rehabilitative Services. Both agencies has teams that we can go in and assess those jobs and determine exactly what's needed, whether we're talking about a job or training opportunities that will enable people with disabilities to enter into that employment opportunity.
So you see sitting at that particular room puts you in a position to make sure that there's an inclusive workforce out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And create opportunities. I think that's something that is important for people to understand and to appreciate, because there's a lot of work involved in that particular workforce board.
Yes.
But at the same time, there's a lot of potential gain on the opportunity side.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. One of the things I was curious about, Rick, what barriers do you see, or what's the biggest challenges that you face at DBVI right now?
See, that question is hard for me to answer because, for starters, I never called it a barrier.
Okay.
I always look at it as a challenge.
I agree with
and
that.
And how can we overcome it? And it's still one of those challenges often that, you know, I indicated I've almost been doing rehabilitation work now for going close to 4 decades. And even as I look back, it's the public's opinion of people with disabilities.
Okay.
We still have to struggle with that
mm-hmm.
because there's still a certain number of people out there that believe if you have a disability, you don't have
a blind person can't do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so to me, that's still the biggest barrier.
Mm-hmm.
And the greatest way to overcome that, and it's certainly not anywhere near what it used to be, but just to be able to show success story after success story.
Part of it's how to learn how to tell the story in a way that demonstrates the abilities and that people can do things. Like, I'm sure very few people thought there was such a thing as a blind architect.
Yes, absolutely. And I look every year, I'll pull a report about the different types of jobs that
uh-huh.
we have been involved in helping people go to work with. And, you know, it's things like, it's often it'll be maybe school teachers. It could be, mm-hmm. some different medical fields. We're able to work with people and help them figure out how they can do that job. You know, certainly, or anything within the informational technology field, a lot of positions are available there. But then, you know, not everybody wants to go to school.
That's true.
People, you know, they may want to do something more in the trades. I know we've worked with people that are electricians and plumbers. You know, one gentleman that owned a trucking company. And and I always have to tell the story. One time we worked with a lady. She was 101 years old.
Oh, wow.
She still was running a shop where she made wedding dresses. And what she was having problems with was her bookkeeping. She couldn't see the books that she kept for her business. And so we were able to figure out how she could keep her books. And so she continued to work at 101 with a visual impairment.
Oh, wow. So there are stories out there that can demonstrate the ability side of this.
Absolutely.
Okay. Rick, what do you think your legacy is going to be? What do you want to be known for at your time at DBVI?
I want to be known for several things. I think we already really do well a lot of the areas that we provide services in. I want to just take it to another level.
Okay.
As we look at helping people go to work, I want us to see, like this past year, the average hourly wage was a little over $22 an hour, which is not bad, but I think we can even do better than that. So I would really like to get that average hourly wage higher. And our pre-employment transition services, those services for students and youth, I want to take that to another level. I want to really look at what are the high demand occupations within Virginia and make sure that our programming is continuously being matched up to that. And then within the enterprise division, you know, I've set a goal that their overall number of individuals be increased by 20% and within the next 4 years. And so that is one of those, another area that I want to make sure that we are creating opportunities where we can.
That's what was in my head. You're creating opportunities for people to be able to live, work, and thrive in their communities.
Absolutely.
Well, Rick, that would be a great legacy. I look forward to learning about that when you're finally retired. Doesn't sound like that's in your future for a while.
But not that I'm going to announce here.
So one of the things, Rick, how would you recommend people, what would you want to say to people who are thinking about coming to DBVI for services, and how can they get in touch with the agency?
We have several ways. We've tried to make it just as easy as possible. We have an 800 number. People can call. That's 1-800-622-2155. Again, that's 800-622-2155. Or they can also go to our agency's webpage, which is vdbvi.org. That's V as in Virginia, D as department, B as blind, V as envision, I as impaired.org. So vdbvi.org. And when you get to that webpage, you will see a link to apply now. And it's just very simple. You put in your name and phone number, and someone from one of our regional offices will call you.
Well, that sounds pretty simple. And do you have a message to folks that are thinking about it?
Reach out now, because the sooner you reach out, the quicker you will find that you can live the life of your dreams.
That's excellent. Well, Rick, I just want to say thanks so much for coming on the podcast today. I've learned a lot, and I believe this is going to be helpful to people who are thinking about coming to services or what they can benefit from being a part of DBVI and sharing your vision with us. I think it's very inspiring. So, Commissioner Rick Mitchell, we thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Joe. Enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening in today on The Blind Experience with Dr. Joe Ashley. I hope you found some information that was useful to you, and we look forward to having you back again for the next episode.